Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Somebody's Gotta Win edition, as we preview Sunday's game between the 0-3 Bengals and the 0-3 Cleveland Browns. We have all sorts of good stuff for you this week, but before we get rolling, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast sent directly to you by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the Shazam app. If you've never used it, check it out sometime. Whoever invented it is a genius. Coming up on this episode of the podcast, Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the Bengals and Browns and share his keys to this week's game. We'll spend 5 minutes with the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. Carlos Dunlap discusses the second most impressive streak in sports history. We'll do fantastic fun facts with linebacker Kevin Minter. And on the last lap, in honor of Hugh Jackson, Dave Lapham takes a look at the five most charismatic coaches that he played for in Cincinnati. But first, it's a Vontaze sighting. After serving a 3-game suspension for what the NFL called an illegal hit to a defenseless player in the preseason, Vontaze Burfict was back on the practice field this week and is scheduled to return to the starting lineup on Sunday. Just before serving that suspension, Burfict got a 3-year, $38.68 million contract extension that kicks in next season. He talked about it for the first time on Wednesday, along with how much he expects to play this week.
It means a lot. You know, now we're here for 4 more years, so, I mean, we're past it now, and just obviously now we could just win some games. I don't know how many snaps I'll get on Sunday, but I'm not sure if they're going to throw me in hot water on Sunday and make me play the whole game, but I'm ready for whatever, and just so whatever can help us win.
Vontaze and the Bengals are facing the Cleveland Browns this week, and I want to turn the clock back to November 6th, 2014, the infamous Thursday night game at Paul Brown Stadium, where Andy Dalton had a 2.0 passer rating and the Browns dominated the Bengals 24-3. When that game was over, the Browns were in first place in the AFC North at 6-3. Cleveland fans formed a ring around the bottom rows of Paul Brown Stadium and chanted, "Brian Hoyer, Brian Hoyer." Well, since that night, the Browns are 5-37. Let me repeat that. 5-37. Brian Hoyer, by the way, was 10-6 as the starting quarterback in Cleveland. Of the 27 starting QBs they've trotted out since returning to the NFL in 1999, a list that includes Spurgeon Wynn, Seneca Wallace, Luke, and Josh McCown, as well as Johnny Manziel, Hoyer is the only one with a winning record. Cleveland's current quarterback is rookie DeShone Kizer. Time to take a closer look at him and this week's opponent with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, the Cleveland Browns are 1-18 since Hugh Jackson became head coach last year. They're the only team in the NFL that hasn't had the lead so far this year. They've accumulated all these draft picks in recent seasons. When's it going to pay off?
That's a good question, Dan. They've also accumulated them for next year's draft. They have 5 picks in the first 2 rounds in 2018. But at some point, you know, with all these high draft picks that they have accumulated, they have to put their bat on the ball. I mean, they've had guys that they've drafted that high that are out of the league. Johnny Manziel, you know, coming to mind. Gilbert, the defensive back, first rounder out of Oklahoma State, out of the league. So you can have all the draft picks you want. You have to evaluate the talent properly and put your bat on the ball. I love Hugh Jackson, but this stat would be bothersome to me or anybody with respect to Hugh Jackson. No coach has made the third year of their contract under Jim Haslam. So you're 1-18 right now, and you're into that second year. Wow. I mean, if you don't start winning some football games, will Jim Haslam do it again? Will he, you know, cut the throat of the head coach before he gets to that third year and start another rebuilding process? And now you're on that continual merry-go-round. That's the big question up in Cleveland. When are they going to form a plan? Stick to the plan.
Cleveland is going with a rookie quarterback, DeShone Kizer, out of Notre Dame. The knock on him going into the draft was that he was inaccurate. Well, he's already thrown 7 interceptions this year, 3 more than any other NFL quarterback.
Right, Dan, and that inaccuracy comes from, you know, not having real good footwork and mechanics, and they thought Hugh Jackson would be a guy, kind of a quarterback whisperer that could fix that. Well, it doesn't happen overnight, particularly at this level of play. His accuracy is terrible. I mean, 32nd in the NFL, completing under 53% of his passes, 52.8. on third down, the money down, he's only completing 39.1% of his passes, you know, and he's got two interceptions on third down. In the fourth quarter, he's got three of his seven interceptions. So third down and fourth quarter, you know, the money down and the money quarter, he's woeful. You know, he's only completed 50% of his passes in the fourth quarter. So, you know, he's a young guy, obviously, that is being confused by what he's seeing out there. So Paul Gunther's got to be drooling and licking his chops at the same time, you know, with the double A-gap blitz and different things he can do on the back end to confuse him with coverages. And then maybe up front, you know, show a little bit of that spinner joker kind of thing where he's got Chris Smith or whoever he's got, Michael Johnson, going in and out of different gaps and rushing the passer from different spots. So maybe confuse Kizer and his protection calls and then what he sees down the field after the snap.
Lap, the Bengals finally scored an offensive touchdown last week in Green Bay. They scored two, in fact, right. But there was still something missing, the big play on offense. They had a 50-yard pass to A.J. Green in Game 2. Other than that, the big play has been invisible.
It really has, and really didn't try to get the ball down the field vertically very much, you know, against the Green Bay Packers. You know, some of that is what they're doing. They had six defensive backs in the field trying to take away the deep zones. They played a lot of cover two and had safeties deep. The other part of that big play is the Bengals defensively continue to give them up. You know, in every one of their losses, you can point to, you know, a 49-yard scramble by a rookie quarterback, a 48-yard reception right in the two-minute drill of the first half on a rub play. But in this game against Green Bay, the defense played 61 snaps and held them to 157 yards, 2.5 yards a play. But they had four chunk plays for 187 yards, 46.7 per play. 61 plays, you're doing great, and then it's all undone with four chunk plays that you make mistakes and they capitalize on them. You're going to have to eliminate those. You're going to have to get some chunks and don't give any up. That's what you're going to have to do to get back in the race here.
To get back in the race, the Bengals need to get on the scoreboard more often. And here's a stat that will blow your mind. Remember 2015? It wasn't that long ago, but it sure feels like it. In the first 12 games of that season, before Andy Dalton broke his thumb, the Bengals scored 30 or more points 7 times. They were averaging roughly 28. So if you're in the Andy Dalton is terrible camp, and judging by social media, many of you are, pop on some tape from 2015. Yeah, he's made a share of mistakes this year, but you don't have to go back very far to be reminded of what he's capable of. Andy's passer rating so far this year is 69.6. Not good. But the opposing quarterback this week, rookie DeShone Kizer, has the lowest passer rating in the NFL at 53.2. He's the first topic of conversation as we spend 5 minutes with the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan.
It's been everything that I think that a rookie quarterback goes through when he starts his NFL career. So you go through the good and the bad. I will say this, he's a big kid. He's got a great arm. He's always better the next time around. I mean, he makes a mistake or he has a bad series. He comes back and he has a better series the next time around. I don't think he's been helped out by the group of wide receivers that are currently on the Browns roster. And, of course, with the subtraction of Corey Coleman, because he's out with a broken hand, that even kind of displays the inadequacies of their wide receivers even a little bit more. So he doesn't get a lot of help from the wide receivers. He's got a great arm, smart kid. I just think he's going through the normal bumps in the road that a rookie quarterback goes through, and he's definitely, because of the schedule, he's been going through them. I mean, opening up with the Steelers, Baltimore on the road, Indianapolis last week, and now you guys coming up this Sunday. He's had a pretty rough baptism into the NFL.
Yeah, that's amazing. All those division games, Coach D, in a very short time frame. That's serious. We always ask you about this guy, but I got to ask you again, Joe Thomas. I cannot wrap my arms around 10,131 consecutive snaps. Every year, I think this has got to be the year where he says, "You know what? My knee is killing me. It's got my shoulder, my elbow, whatever." This guy, We were talking about him at the press conference today with Marvin, and I think the consensus in the room was this guy is probably as dedicated to his teammates as any guy in the history of professional sports.
Yeah, he. You know what? Well put. I mean, he really is. You know, it's amazing. When he came up on the 10,000 snaps, the consecutive snaps, which was in Baltimore, you know, a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
It was amazing that he finally revealed throughout that time period how injured he has been, because you've never heard a peep
right.
out of him about not being able to go. So all of a sudden he starts talking about, I had that ligament tear in my, in my knee, and I decided to stay in the game. And as you all know, Dave, I mean, he's staying in the game with a team that is maybe three wins or,
right.
four wins or no wins like it was last year. And the other thing is, I think, Dave, he really wants to hang on in the hopes that Hugh Jackson and the Browns can turn this thing around and they can be playing in some real relevant games. He's always talked about, wow, it would be great to be in a playoff game. Perfect scenario playing it in Cleveland.
Right.
But after going through everything that he's gone through and all the different coaching changes, the ultimate cherry on the top of the sundae would be for him to play in a playoff game with the Browns. I hope he gets there. They're going to have to hurry up to do it, because I think that he's just amazing. He really is.
The voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan, is our guest. Excuse me. Let's talk about the number one pick in this year's draft, Myles Garrett. He hasn't played yet after hurting his ankle before the season opener. I read that he was on an exercise bike at practice today. Any chance the Bengals see him on Sunday? And how good did he look in the preseason before he got hurt?
Dan, I got to tell you, he looked really good, and he progressively got better. And the guys that he played with looked even better than they look now, because they were playing with him mm-hmm. at that time. So the ultimate disappointment was when we came up to the first week of the regular season, and they come off a 4-0 preseason that they really looked pretty good. I mean, and defensively they looked very, very good, and he was a big reason for that. But as we come up to the first game of the season against the Steelers, and it's Wednesday, the practice week is going on, and the news comes out that he's got a high ankle sprain, and I have to tell you, that devastated them, and really the fans, because they were so excited to see him play coming up that Sunday at home against Pittsburgh. And I think it's been a big, big blow to the entire defense, because the pass rush has been tepid at best. And I think that they figured not only would he give them pass rush, but because he was probably going to get a lot of extra attention in trying to keep him quiet on that side, other people would flourish because he was on the field. And that just hasn't happened now in the first three games. So he has been on the exercise bike. I would still think that he's at least another week away. I know that they would like to get him on the practice field, but even if they did by the end of the week this week, I mean, he has not done anything football-oriented since, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I think that would be a push. So if it continues at this pace, I would think more likely maybe against the Jets next week. But I think that the Bengals would be an unreasonable expectation right now that he would be out there.
By the way, if I was teaching a course on sports broadcasting and did a lecture on how to call the games of a losing team, I would pop on a tape of Jim Donovan. He never loses his enthusiasm and is a joy to listen to. During our conversation with Jim, we discussed Joe Thomas's remarkable streak of never having missed a snap in 10-plus NFL seasons. He's at 10,131 and counting. Here's Carlos Dunlap on my pick for the second most impressive streak in sports history.
That's very tough to accomplish, I know me personally, I invest a lot of money in my body off the field, with modalities, getting treatments, body work done every day of the week, sometimes 2 and 3 times in a day. But there's a 95-99% injury rate in this league. And for him to play 100% injury rate in this league, and for him to play 10,000 snaps, that means he played through a lot of injuries, and that makes him, a tough cookie.
Will you say anything to him about it on Sunday?
Yeah, obviously I'm going to congratulate him, because obviously to do it and to play at that high of a level for so long, there's nobody else that done that. You got to respect that.
So, if Thomas's streak of 10,000-plus consecutive snaps is my pick for the second most impressive streak in sports history, you're probably wondering, what's number one? Well, it's not Cal Ripken Jr. That would be Marty Brenneman's streak of never botching the call of a big play in his 44 years as the voice of the Reds. Still to come, Lap's Keys to the Game, and The Last Lap. But first, this week's Fun Facts segment, where you get to know the person under the pads. Time for some fun facts with Bengals linebacker Kevin Minter from Sewanee, Georgia, not too far from Atlanta. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and the types of things you enjoyed doing as a kid.
I'm originally from College Park, moved to Lilburn, grew up in Lilburn, Lilburn, Georgia. Then the way I grew up, man, I come from a modest home. Had a loving mother, single parent. You know, she took him on mommy and daddy for the most part. And I had an older brother and two sisters that, you know, they also took care of me as well. I wasn't really much to it. I mean, education was big on my house. If I was gonna play sports, obviously, like I ended up doing. I mean, my mom was always about, you know, giving 100, you know, on everything or whatever. So, you know, when it came to football, she didn't play. Let's just say that, you know. You know, I mean, whether it be, you know, practice or like, you know, just little league games or whatever, Willa Mae was always there, you know, on my butt, you know, why'd you miss that tackle, why'd you do this and that. So, I had a pretty simple childhood, very loving family, and, you know, just I was more fortunate than a lot of guys I came up with, so.
Kevin, I can tell how much love and admiration you have for your mom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anybody tell you, you know, if they had, you know, single parent, you know how hard that can actually be. And but she did it, though. Raised all four of us, so it is what it is. Yeah.
I saw an old story that said when you were in 10th grade, you had 28 tackles in a game.
Yeah.
Was that a game that put you on the map, so to speak? And what do you remember about it?
Yeah, sort of. You know, I definitely got some buzz around the state with that game or whatever. I remember from it, we were playing a triple option team, and, I mean, I had to dive, and they kept giving it to him. And I had a couple hustle plays, but for the most part, it was I was just on one that game. It just felt like everything was coming towards me, and I was making every play that game, so... I had a couple games like that, actually, that same season. I had 21 and one, and I had 19 in another. So, yeah, it was a crazy year. You know, that kind of put me on the map as far as, you know, state recognition. You know, Georgia, you know, when it comes to football, they don't play about that. It's, you know, it's a little more than just a sport. It's more like a religion. So, you know, it wasn't long until I started getting national recognition, too. And I actually transferred schools, transferred to PC Ridge and Swanee. That's when I started playing linebacker. I was playing DN when I actually had those 28 tackles. So I started playing linebacker in my junior year or whatever, then the rest is history. So.
We're doing fun facts with Kevin Minter. So you're from Georgia but went to LSU. What did Les Miles do to convince you to go to Baton Rouge?
It wasn't much. I kind of just went to a game. Just the atmosphere. I kind of got wrapped up in it. If you ever been, you know, Saturday night in Baton Rouge, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's unreal. It's like no other. But it was a close recruiting battle between LSU and Bama. You know, I definitely thought about going to Coach Smart. I actually recruited me pretty hard or whatever, but I just couldn't sway from LSU though, man. Actually had my conversations with the coaches or whatever, you know, just seeing it was actually a few Georgia players on the LSU team and some of the guys I actually looked up to when I was younger, like Perry Riley and Kevin Shepard. So it just felt like home, you know, after my visit or whatever. So
we're visiting with Kevin Minter. While you were there, you played for a national championship. Yeah. Unfortunately, you lost to your arch rival Alabama in that game. And to make matters worse, I guess, you had beaten them during the course of the regular season. Does that one still sting?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just to be that close and to lose like that, you almost wish you never were in the game. You know, that's how much it kind of hurts at times. But... you know, it was an experience, you know. It happened. But, you know, I just hope I don't experience something like that ever again. So,
Yeah. A.J. McCarron and Dre Kirkpatrick were on the other side that day. Did they mention it?
We actually haven't had a conversation about it yet, but, you know, I'm sure it's coming. But I'm not looking forward to it.
We're talking to Kevin Minter. Let's move to your NFL career. You were a second-round draft pick by Arizona. What was your draft day or draft night experience like?
I was actually in my mother's house in Suwannee. And just sitting around the couch, you know, my family, like I said, we close, you know. Had my brothers and sisters there. Had some friends over or whatever. It was something, it was small, but it was good, you know. Had some chicken wings and just we watched, you know, ESPN. And when they called me and I heard my name called over the thing, it was pretty surreal, you know. Growing up, you know, I always believed I could possibly make it to the NFL, but to actually being drafted, I mean, that was a crazy experience. And, you know, I don't know, I'm living my dream right now, so can't explain.
You spent 4 years with the Cardinals. Bruce Arians was the head coach. He strikes me from afar as a cool guy. Oh, yeah. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, B.A., man, I'm talking like whether it be just conversations or you just looking at him on the sideline with his, you know, with the damn kangaroo hat and all that other stuff. I mean, he was a cool guy, man. And, you know, I'll always respect him. You know, he gave me my first chance. So I'll always love him to death. So it is what it is.
A few more questions for Kevin Minter. You became a free agent this past offseason. Did you enjoy being wooed again?
It had its ups and downs. Free agency was – it was definitely something, though. You know, just seeing, like, I might be here, I might not be here, I might, you know, be in other places or whatever. Obviously talking to coaches pretty much every other day. I don't know. You get to a point where you kind of just want to put your feet down somewhere and be solid. And I think I chose a great spot. You know, I've been loving it here, you know, since the day I got here, you know. Actually being around Hazlitt and Polly G, you know, and Marvin, I feel like I made a great decision in this free agency. So,
Kevin, you're known for making hard hits. One article referred to you as a cerebral attack dog. Describe the feeling of when you make that great hit in an NFL game.
You know, it's like mission accomplished. You know, I got you. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. It's obviously a general rush. You know, it's like, man, I finally got this fool. You know, he's been trying to run around all damn day or whatever. But for the most part, it's just, you know, it's exhilarating. You know, I go celebrate with my team or whatever, but I know I got to get ready for the next play. So it's not too much celebrating, you know.
Last thing for Kevin Minter, you became a dad recently.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the early joys of fatherhood.
The joys, right? Well, it's something. I mean, he's doing a lot of boo-booing, peeing, eating, and sleeping. he actually just started being awake a little longer than a few minutes now. So, I mean, it's starting to get better, you know. But at first, it's been rough. I mean, my kid got some lungs. He can yell. I'm talking throughout the whole house. He'll wake the dead up. But, yeah, he's definitely a blessing. You definitely look at life differently when you bring a little one to this world. You know, I mean, I'm cautious about everything. Like, I'm cautious about who's holding him, who's all in his face. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's a little you know, especially when it's a boy. It's like, man, it's, you know, he's the one carrying on the name, and, you know, it's a real blessing.
I'm 11 years in, and that part doesn't change. It is a real blessing, trust me. Really appreciate your time. Best of luck. Great to have you in Cincinnati.
No problem. Thank you.
So far this year, Minter is graded as the 15th best linebacker in the NFL by the website Pro Football Focus. Vinny Ray is actually one spot higher at number 14. So, the 88th Battle of Ohio is coming up on Sunday. The Bengals are 19-6 in the last 25 meetings, including 5 wins in a row. Here are Lapp's keys for extending that winning streak to 6. All right, partner, time for this week's keys to the game.
All right, Dan, I'm going to do an ABC list of keys here, you know, and it starts with ball security. Cleveland's struggling, 9 giveaways, last in the league. Bengals have 7, second worst in the league. They're both minus 5, tied for the worst turnover ratio. Have to end every possession, I should say, with a kick, and they did that in Green Bay. The only turnover was on a punt return, last play of the half that was inconsequential. So you have to take care of the football. So that's A. And then after you hold on to the football, sustain, drive, stay on the field. I'm talking third down. Against Green Bay, started 4 of 5, finished 0 for 7, 0 for 5 on third down in the second half. Not staying on the football field, making your defense take too many snaps. For the season, the Bengals are only converting 27% on third down, second worst in the NFL. Cleveland is a skosh better at 30%. They're 30th in the NFL. Who's going to stay on the field and sustain drives with third down conversions? And then finally, that's A and B, and C is finish. You know, you get in the red zone, now you score touchdowns. You don't settle for field goals. Cleveland's allowed 8 red zone touchdowns, tied for most in the league. The Bengals went 2-for-2 against the Packers, which was great. They started off 0-for-6 with touchdowns in the red zone in their first two games. But those two red zone touchdowns are tied for second fewest. So who's going to capitalize on their opportunities in the red zone? And an honorable mention goes to chunk plays, Dan. Have to minimize those chunks and go get yourself some chunks.
Get yourself some chunks. Sounds like it could be the slogan for a dog food. Now time to wrap things up with a Cleveland edition of The Last Lap, where we go down memory lane from Dave Lapham's 42 years as a Bengals player and broadcaster. Our topic was inspired by the Cleveland Browns' charismatic head coach. In honor of Hugh Jackson, the 5 most charismatic coaches, head coaches and assistant coaches that you played for in Cincinnati. Up first, your offensive line coach your first 2 years and the head coach in Cincinnati your next 2.5. Tiger Johnson.
Before I get to Tiger, I want to give an unusual shout out to Dick LeBeau, because he wasn't my position coach with the Bengals, but at the Senior Bowl, he was my special teams coach. The Philadelphia Eagles staff, Mike McCormick, it was his first year coaching. He just finished a multiple Pro Bowl career with the Detroit Lions. Everybody loved Dick LeBeau. It was almost like he was our older brother, and he talked me into being on the kickoff coverage team for the Senior Bowl. So he said, "Big fella, you're the fastest lineman we have. Somebody's got to go down there and do it. Keep your head on a swivel, young man. You'll be fine." Man, I got ear hold on my first kickoff coverage. And I'm like, "Coach, I thought I had my head on a swivel." He goes, "You're all right. You're all right. Just keep running. You'll be good." But Dick LeBeau was, you could tell he was destined for greatness, not only as a player, but just the way he handled guys as a coach. And to Bill Johnson, your first offensive line coach, you always fall in love with. And Bill Johnson was easy to fall in love with. You know, he had the drawl, and he was just a good old guy, Pro Bowl center himself with the 49ers, played with Y.A. Tittle before Tittle went to the New York Giants. So tough guy, expected a lot out of you, demanded accountability, and loved Tiger. He was the best.
Dead ringer for Spencer Tracy.
Yeah. He was.
Up next, the offensive line coach when you went to the Super Bowl, Jim McNally.
Jim McNally, he was something. He came to us, right out of college, had no NFL coaching experience in the offensive line. Forrest Gregg hired him, and Forrest was like, "Jimmy, if you told me to do some of these things you're asking these guys to do, I'd be scratching my head. I don't know if I was still playing." But he let him coach. Forrest never came over to the offensive line, never stuck his nose in there, because Jim McNally knew what the hell he was doing. And he was revolutionary with a lot of his ideas. The guru, there's no question. And I learned so much from Jim McNally in a short period of time about football. He was outstanding.
Before he was the head coach of the Green Bay Packers and Indianapolis Colts, Lindy Infante was your offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and Lindy Infante he was kind of ahead of his time, with the slide protection that we do, weak side slide. And it was – the right tackle would be one-on-one and everybody else would slide and pick up blitzers away from the strength of the formation. So then people it took them over a year, but they started to realize that, if they brought two people strong side blitz, the back could only pick up one of them. So then we had to start to slide strong and slide weak. But Lindy was always a step ahead of the game, and we rode that slide protection all the way to the Super Bowl. People never figured it out for that whole year. And a lot of stuff he did with tight end Dan Ross was innovative. And Lindy Infante instilled a lot of confidence in Kenny Anderson. And everybody knows how that first game started out for Kenny. And Lindy Infante was just adamant in his support of Kenny Anderson. And he got MVP and went to the Super Bowl.
When Paul Brown looked to hire a head coach in 1980, he found him in the Canadian Football League, coaching the Toronto Argonauts, Forrest Gregg.
Forrest Gregg coached both the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals, so it's appropriate we're talking about Forrest Gregg in this game, in this matchup. Forrest Gregg was just a very imposing figure, and he never double-talked you. What he told you, he was telling the media, he was telling the coaching staff, his opinions and thoughts never varied. He never had marbles in his mouth. He never, you know, was two-faced, two-sided on anything. Forrest Gregg was honest as the day is long. And, you know, Vince Lombardi called him best player ever coached. And he had me in the very first meeting when he get up there on the podium, Super Bowl rings hanging off his fingers. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to this guy. And he was extremely demanding physically, mentally. But we knew he was not asking us to do anything more than Vince Lombardi had ever asked him to do. You know, if he made us do 90 up-downs, three sets of 30, Lombardi made him do 100, four sets of 25. You know, it's just the way it was.
Last but not least, I don't necessarily think of Paul Brown as charismatic, but he's at the top of your list.
Yeah, Paul Brown was charismatic in his just the command of a room was such a, you know, not an imposing figure. Paul Brown would come walking in and he'd have on his white buck shoes and he'd have on seersucker pants and, you know, like a plaid, you know, shirt and get up there and everybody's scared to death. You know, he'd after a game, he'd watch the game tape, game film, 16 millimeter back then, and he'd make a list of all the things he wanted to address. And it was a legal pad. And he'd get up there with his Ben Franklin glasses. He'd walk into the room. And, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. And these, you know, big gargantuan guys all have armpits down to their waist because they don't want to be attacked by Paul Brown and picked on. And Paul would rip you apart with a few words. You know, it's like, you look like a cat that got run over by a truck. You know, we can't have that kind of thing. You have to form some sort of resistance up there. he was just unbelievable, you know. But Paul Brown was an innovator, way ahead of his time. And the biggest thing he did was he understood to hire good people and let them do their job. And he was the best. He was the best at it.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Don't forget to have it delivered directly to you. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.